Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Today we zero in on veggies, vegetables, and the talk there might swing around to the School for Beginning Market Growers. And so we'll talk about that a little bit, too, because that's a great program. You might want to get involved in it. Certainly, we'll talk about growing great veggies with our guest, John Hendrickson. John is with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems at the UW-Madison, and he's the outreach specialist for fresh market vegetables and food systems. And he's also the coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. So we've got lots of things we can talk about here. Do you grow vegetables just for your family? Maybe you grow them to sell. Love to hear from you about that. Maybe you've participated in that School for Beginning Market Growers in the past. What'd you get out of it? Or maybe you have some questions about it. Maybe you've never done it and would like to get involved. At any rate, there's lots of ways to reach us. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can go to my Facebook page. That's at The Larry Mueller Show. And you can post question, comment, maybe even a photo there. We'd love to hear from you, of course. John Hendrickson, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. Gardening, you know, it's kind of hard to think about vegetable gardens right now in some ways.
Yeah, it's one of the first really cold days and weeks we're having here.
Yeah, what is it, 15 below zero, I think, in some parts of Wisconsin today, so... Yeah, you're not going to be getting much into the ground today.
You know, this is actually one of my favorite times, though.
Why is
that? In terms of gardening. Well, because everything's perfect right now.
Yeah.
Because it's all in your mind. You know, how beautiful that vegetable garden is going to look next year, how wonderful the weather's going to be next year. Everything's going to go according to plan.
Everything. Yeah, as it always does. As it always does. You know, it's not even going to be that long. And even though winter is kind of just starting... We're going to have those seed catalogs.
I've already have several.
You have
in
some?
My mailbox.
I haven't gotten a single one yet. Oh.
Well, the commercial catalogs for us commercial growers come out a bit earlier than the ones for the home gardeners.
Okay. Well, yeah, but certainly in January.
Mm-hmm.
They just come flooding in, and that just sort of, oh, good. Summer can't be that. Spring can't be that far behind. The catalogs are here.
Oh. Well, you know, after we pass December 21st, it's all... It's all looking rosy from there forward.
Yeah, that's the longest day of the year, isn't
exactly.
it? Exactly. First day of winter, longest day of the year, and then it starts to get, although it doesn't really seem like it. You know, to be perfectly honest, John, it's a couple of weeks before it really, all right, maybe I can tell a little difference now. But it's fun anyway. And, you know, as you look at a garden, thinking about the successful, the main components of a successful vegetable garden, whether for home use or for selling, probably pretty close to the same.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
Because, you know, with the commercial garden, you've got the added factors of having to sell those items, trying to get a good price, keeping your expenses down, those kinds of things. But, you know, in terms of the production side of things, yeah, we all want that inch of rain every week.
Yeah.
Preferably on Saturday night when we're not awake and not wanting to garden.
Exactly. And we should get your credentials. I mean, you're a guy that does a lot of gardening here and commercial gardening as well. So tell us about your gardening expertise or experience.
Well, in addition to working here at the university, I have my own farm where I grow organic vegetables, a couple acres of organic vegetables that I market to restaurants. And that certainly comes into play in terms of my coordinating the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers.
Yeah, and that school is what's always in, is it in January? Always?
Yeah, we always do it in January. It's always a little bit frustrating for some of the participants because they want to get out and see things growing.
Yeah.
But our class is taught primarily by experienced growers, and they simply don't have the time during the growing season to come and spend 3 days teaching. So that's why we do it in the wintertime. It's January 13th, 14th, and 15th this year.
And we have a, I think we have a link. Yes, we do. We have a link to it at my Facebook page, at The Larry Mueller Show. So you can find, if you want to find out more about it, and then certainly we'll talk some more about it as we move along here today. But if you want to learn about how to sign up and all those good things, why, you can go to the Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, or
Well, our the center where I work is up on our website as well.
As well. So there you go. Callers online, and I think we might just well go to the phones. Marilee is in Barnes, Wisconsin, one of my favorite parts of the world, because we have a cabin in Barnes area. Hi, Marilee.
Hi, Larry. I just wanted to know, you know, I lived in Marshfield for a long time when my husband was with the clinic.
Yeah.
And you could grow head lettuce, and it headed out just like the ones in the store, and you could grow celery that looked just like from the store. I loved it down there to garden. But I can grow almost anything up here, too. And I live by the bridge, by the Upper Lake Bridge that goes into Birch Lake and that.
Yeah.
All right. I'm the first house on the left-hand side as you go up the hill if you're coming from what used to be Danny's Laker Lounge.
Yeah, I know right where it is.
Okay, well, that's where I live. And I've got a humongous flower garden in the front, and then I've got 13 other gardens in the back. But we're fenced off, so you can't see any of that. What I cannot grow up here, I don't know what I do. I cannot buy set onions. They simply sit and look at me. That's all they do.
Well.
And it's mostly sand. I do use cow manure, horse manure, and we use ashes from our wood stove. And then I have a slop bucket in the kitchen. It doesn't sound very nice, but I throw banana peelings that are chopped up, eggshells, everything in there. Yeah. And that with some water, and that all gets thrown on the garden all winter long.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the soil is real black and fertile from me doing that for years. And the leaves I leave on there, and they're simply plowed the ground.
Yeah.
Yep. But I don't know what the hell those onions are doing.
Well, let's see, Marilee, if John knows. John, any ideas?
Well, my advice to you would be to try growing onions from plants or direct from seed rather than buying the sets.
Those I can grow, the pull onions I used to call. You know, that you put in water on the table in the summertime? I can grow those. I just can't grow those set onions. Why won't they grow?
Well, yeah, you're of course at a disadvantage in your northern area. The trick to getting a good onion, even in most parts, even southern Wisconsin, is to start those onions early. And I grow all my onions from seed so that I can get the varieties that I want. I can get varieties that are geared towards northern areas.
Really?
Yeah, because when you buy a set onion, most times you don't even know what the variety name is you're growing.
Don't.
You just, you're getting it at the hardware store or the big box store, what have you.
Yeah.
So I would encourage you to look into your seed catalogs, and I don't know if you have a sunny window or a neighbor with a greenhouse or something where you could start your onions from seed. And you have to start them very, very early.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
Like in March?
February.
April?
February.
Oh.
Because it takes, the onions grow really slowly,
yes,
especially
they do.
In the beginning. And when it comes time to transplant, you want to put out a nice, sturdy, stocky onion plant. Now, you can, if you don't want to grow from seed, you can buy plants from a number of seed companies.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be preferable over trying to work with the sets.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it true that when your onions get real tall, the green tops, which I harvest and chop them up just like chives.
Sure.
But do you have to step those down in order for the onions to get bigger? I've always heard that.
When it's growing in the garden?
Yeah.
No, you're not going to want to do that because
you're
taking away the plant's productive capacity in
terms
of photosynthesis. Now, when you're growing it as a seedling, when it's in your greenhouse or your windowsill, what have you, many growers do give it a haircut, so to speak.
Okay.
And that helps the plant grow nice and stocky so that it's a really nice, healthy plant when you're transplanting into the garden.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, Larry, it was colder than H up here this morning. It was miserable.
It had to be, 10 below?
It's Something like that. Yep, it was just wonderful. I just stuck my nose out and fed the birds and run right back in. So I'm glad you're where you are right now.
Thanks, Marilee.
All right. Talk to you guys later. I just absolutely love public radio.
Oh, thank you so much for calling. And nice to get that report on the what's going on in the Barnes area. I bet, well, she said she was fenced. She, Marilee, has it all fenced in, her gardens. And I, there's a pretty good reason for that, because I would guess because, like, her place is like our place, and we're not that far apart from each other, the deer would be having a field day without it being fenced in. Thanks again. You can join in, too, by the way, talking vegetables today with John Hendrickson of the Center for Integrated Ag Systems. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. And let's turn to Joe in Ryo, Wisconsin. Joe, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I moved to Ryo about a year ago, and our lot, there is no place for a garden. And I got hold of some old telephone poles, and I built myself a raised garden.
Okay.
It's about 4 feet by 7 feet on the inside.
Okay.
And I used mostly commercial compost.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I used composted horse manure.
Okay.
And I got about 10 inches of soil in there.
Okay.
I didn't have the greatest luck. I had good tomatoes. I had good beans. My beets did not do well. My lettuce did not do well. Radishes did all right. But what am I doing? How deep does that soil need to be?
10 inches probably enough.
Yeah, in your case, Joe, my guess is that it's not a matter of soil depth, but it might be an issue with moisture, because when you have a raised bed, you've got to do a bit more irrigating than a garden sitting right next to that raised bed, which hasn't been raised, and so that may have been an issue with those crops that you mentioned.
Well, I have rain barrels here, and I collect all my rainwater, and I've been watering every day almost.
Yeah. Well, you need about an. Do you need more than an inch a week on one of those?
An inch a week is kind of a off the cuff recommendation.
I drilled some holes in the bottom, and then it does. I water
drains.
Runs down through those holes.
It drains. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, what about shade?
It doesn't get any very much shade except late in the afternoon.
Well, that's good, because you don't want it to have it getting any shade. So that sounds fine.
I want to follow up. You said that you drilled holes on the bottom. So this is a raised bed that has a bottom to it, not just sides?
Well, yeah. It has a bottom. It's only about a foot deep or a little better.
Huh. Because, you don't really have to put a bottom on a raised bed, assuming you've got some soil and underneath there. Because some of those crops would benefit by being able to go as deep as they want to, particularly root crops.
Well, I was wondering if I had it deep enough, but it's about table height, so I can sit in the chair and work halfway across from one side. And
I gotcha. Okay. Well, you might want to 10 inches should be plenty, to be perfectly honest, for almost any crop, especially the ones you mentioned. I mean.
Yeah.
Trying to think, tomatoes.
Yeah, that should be deep enough. I guess I'd just encourage you to think carefully about the watering issue.
Yeah.
What type of fertilizer should I use on there?
Well, I can't give you a blanket recommendation for all crops and all situations. Ideally, what you're going to want to do is, do what growers do and take a soil test periodically and see what you've got in that raised bed and make sure that you're replenishing things as it's being removed by each year's crops.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, if you're composting and have a source of decent compost and are adding that on a regular basis, you should be fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, John Hendrickson, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller. Marika Suval, our on-air producer today, here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio on this edition of Garden Talk, zeroing in on vegetables with John Hendrickson from the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. He also coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. And it comes on every December, usually, or sometimes really early in January, and we talk about what's going on with the center a little bit, but also, of course, what's going on with that school for beginning market growers, something you can get involved in. And if you have a question about it or vegetables in general, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And Al in Menominee, we are on to you. Hi, Al. Thank you for calling.
Sure. We try to grow carrots every year, and usually the first year of a new garden, we get pretty nice ones. But after that, they're always, 3 inches long. They're nice big around, but they're very short.
Hmm.
So you're experiencing good results in the first year of a garden?
Well, it seems that way. That's not very scientific, probably. But like this year we had... they look good on the tops look good. The carrots look good from, where they're sticking out of the ground, but they're all about 3 inches long.
Mm-hmm. What kind of soil do you have?
Sort of a sandy loam. And then way below that, in a foot or a foot and a half down, there's rock and clay.
Yeah, but that's long.
Yeah, you should be able to successfully grow carrots if you've got a nice sandy loam. I wish I had a better sandy loam than I have. What kind of
pack down though? Sort of, it gets packy in the middle of summer.
Uh huh. What are you using to work up your garden in the spring before you're planting?
A rear tine tiller. Probably getting down 8-9 inches.
Okay. If you're doing that over a course of many years, you can actually develop a hard pan layer underneath in your soil, which could be preventing you from having nice long carrots. So you need to be careful about using that tillage. The irony is that in order to get good germination, you need a nice fine seed bed for those little tiny carrot seeds to come up. So that's kind of conflicting advice there. I would encourage you to, when you're preparing your beds, to rake it up even higher than make kind of a raised bed, not with wood sides or anything, but make a nice raised bed before you're seeding those carrots, so that they have the best chance. Yeah, a little bit more depth to elongate. And carrots also really benefit from very even and maybe even more moisture than a lot of other crops. One thing that'll a carrot will do if it doesn't have enough moisture is it'll send out additional side roots, and that can make your carrots stubby. But then with several tap roots going down, so it's important to keep the soil moist.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Al, for calling. Appreciate your call. And all of our lines are filled here. Bobby in Superior, Wisconsin. We turn to you now. Hi, Bobby. Are you there? We got Bobby there? No, I guess we don't have Bobby there. Thought we did. Let's try...
Hello?
Oh, there you are.
Am I here? Oh, good.
Whew. All right. You're here. How can we help you?
Okay. I live in Superior, Wisconsin. I have come from beautiful sandy loam soil to this hard red clay. I live in town now. I'm just a couple of blocks off the lake. And so we have been doing raised beds and building our own soil with composting and, kind of begging grass clippings from our neighbors who don't put anything on their lawns. We're all organic. My problem is this year had the most gorgeous broccoli plants. They were like 3 feet high. I mean, just amazing. But no head. I mean, I had little tiny heads all over the place, but no big heads. What did I do wrong?
Mm. Sounds like maybe a lot of nitrogen in there, and
yeah, you could actually
over fertilized it.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. Was this a spring planted crop or a fall planted crop?
Spring.
In the spring, and how early did you get that in?
Probably not until, you know, here it's just, oh, so frustrating. Probably not until the third week in June.
Okay.
Just because it's so cold and wet, and I live in, you know, this area is just, it's colder, it's right here than it is, you know, six blocks from here.
Yeah. And were these, did you plant transplants and or direct seed, or and where did the transplants come? And did you grow those or did you buy those transplants?
Yes, I grew them.
You grew them. Okay. Well, my advice to you would be if you're going to grow your own transplants, to make sure that you're getting a variety that is well-suited to a northern area. That's the first bit of advice. My second bit of advice would be to try to get those in earlier. And, well, you know, broccoli is a heavy feeder. It does like a lot of nitrogen, but... You know, I don't know exactly how much nitrogen is in your raised beds. It sounds like you're working hard to create a nice fertile soil. So my guess is that broccoli would really like the environment that you're creating for it. Are you dealing with a lot of shade?
Well, that is something I do battle with is shade. We've been here 5 years, and the neighbors have a tree that's getting bigger and shading. I have very limited space. I live in town now.
Yeah.
And do they need a lot more sun? They probably aren't getting sun until they're probably getting like 4 hours of good sun.
Yeah, it sounds like you'd benefit from a much sunnier location. And, you know, broccoli is also in the brassica family. And a lot of the brassica plants really like to have very even, consistent growing conditions. So they don't like, you know, shortages of water or shortages of nutrients when they need that. And obviously the sun is a critical factor there too. So.
And that might be part of the problem too, is, you know, it's just been so goofy. It's like, oh, we have tons of rain and then we have no rain. And I have rain barrels cause I don't want to use city water to water my garden, you know, because it, you know, kills stuff. Mm-hmm.
One thing you might want to try is a fall crop, too.
So what is that? I've never heard of that. What would I do?
Well, this is, there's a notion in gardening called succession planting. And that's when you know, there are a lot of gardeners out there that, you know, they rush out in the spring and, you know, there's one day where they plant their garden. And boom, they put everything in and then they sit back and hopefully get something out of it. Succession planting is the notion that there's a whole number of crops that we can plant various times during the season, in some cases every week or every 2 weeks, in the case of a market grower that wants to make sure that their market table has bounty every year or every week through the growing season. But for you, you could do a fall crop of broccoli by down here, I try to get my fall brassicas in around the beginning of July.
Okay.
And that gives that, you know, broccoli likes cool. That's another thing about that I was going to mention, given your planting date, is broccoli really likes cool weather as it's maturing and getting that nice big head.
Okay.
So getting it in early for that early crop or gearing it more towards a fall crop and having it come on in September.
Okay.
Yeah, and that makes good sense.
Yeah, we're thinking of just moving, kind of following the sun because of the neighbor's tree. We're going to move it into, you know, a sunnier. I mean, we have limited, but my backyard kind of takes up my garden, so I'm going to move it a little bit away from that tree. Maybe more sun?
More sun would help.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I have absolutely gorgeous plants, so I'm telling you. I have a hedge of broccoli out there, but no big heads.
Well, you can't eat the broccoli leaves.
Yeah, you can eat the leaves.
You know, and we have done that. And honestly, I have the little teeny heads that I have had, I've been snipping, and it has been, you know, after, honest to goodness, 14 degrees. 14 degrees. My broccoli still, after a little sunshine, perked back up, and I could still clip heads. It was amazing.
Amazing, isn't it? And those little heads are pretty tasty, too.
Oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong with them. They're already, you don't have to do any cutting. They're already chopped up for...
Yeah, I know. And we have done the leaves, too. And I, like right now, I put hay over my Swiss chard, and I can still go out and brush some aside and clip little. They're just about 6 inches tall now, the mm-hmm. little ones. But I've had Swiss chard all fall, even into this, if you want to call this winter now. It's just been amazing. So, but no broccoli big head. So,
hopefully next year.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Bobby. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. All right, Sally, Trigo, Wisconsin. Your turn. Hi, Sally.
Hi, and it's Shelley. Sorry.
Shelley? Oh, sorry.
That's okay. My question's on leeks, and I usually have good success with those. They're usually an inch to an inch and a half around by, you know, the end of the summer. Last spring, when I was working the garden up, they're mulched, and there was a couple that I had missed, and they were growing just fine. So it was, they did not get damaged through the winter snow cover. Mm-hmm. It was rather interesting. I'm wondering if I could grow them like that, plant some of those late, like start them in August so they get a good start and rooted, mulch them and leave them go and see if they would continue into the next summer so they get even, you know, larger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can certainly do that. There are leek varieties that are more cold hardy, winter hardy than others. So okay. You're going to want to pay attention to the seed catalogs and where you're ordering from in terms of getting the varieties that will survive the winter. But I do that on a regular basis. It's really almost impossible to kill a leek.
Wow.
at least the winter hardy ones. I mean, I sometimes, I'm growing on a scale where I can't go out there and do a lot of mulching, and the leeks still survive our winters. It's pretty amazing.
Well,
the thing about doing that is that as a biannual, those leeks are eventually going to send up a seed stalk, and they're going to lose, you know, some of their cooking eating quality the next year. So you may not want to go overboard in terms of how many you're saving. You don't want to save more than you can use in your household or give away to neighbors in terms of overwintering them. But overwintering leeks is a wonderful idea.
Yep.
Okay. The second question I had was very quickly on the hoop houses that are getting very popular in the garden. And as far as setting one up in the fall and getting that soil worked up and then mulching it, so that when the spring, you know, even into March, April, you know, the ground is starting to thaw, you know, under the hoop houses. Are there seeds like carrots or lettuces that you could throw in there in the fall so that they just have their own sprouting, you know, just by they're adapting, you know, to the climate, and so they'll just come up when they're ready, or will they not survive very well through the winter here? We're about 80 miles south of Duluth.
I don't know of anyone that's tried that, planting in the fall and just waiting around for those things to come up in a hoop house in the spring, but I don't see any reason why those seeds wouldn't, you know, I don't know, there would probably be some germination decline.
Okay.
Depending on what seed it is and the quality of the seed that you started with.
Yeah. Could be a big kill off.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, my guess is your results would be variable from year to year, and so it may not, you know, better to do it the more time-tested method and just plant when you're intending to.
Spring. Okay. Well,
all right.
Thanks.
Yep, thanks, Sally. Keith in Green Bay, on to you. Hi, Keith.
How you doing today?
Great. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I live in Green Bay, and up here you either have real sandy soil or heavy clay. Well, I live on a clay ridge, and I've been composting in my raised gardens for years. In years past, I had problems with animals, so this year I tried growing potatoes in a barrel.
Yep.
And I got one potato that was about the size of a softball. The rest of them were golf ball or smaller. So not very productive. Maybe one good meal out of it. What do I need to do to get decent potatoes to grow? Like I said, I've composted in my raised beds. the soil seems to be, you know, fairly loose. I just don't know, and they get consistent sun all day long. I thought, especially in a barrel, they might do better, but they didn't do much at all.
That's curious. You know, I have a lot of colleagues here at the university that are probably better suited to answering this question than myself, given the amount of specialists we have that work with potatoes. And so you may try to give one of those folks a call on this. But my hunch is that we might be dealing with we're able to water on a regular basis and keep that barrel moist.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Potatoes, most potato varieties do most of their setting of tubers at around the time when you see the potato flowers.
Okay.
And so that would be a time to make sure that you've got adequate fertility and moisture going on in that barrel.
Okay.
I can't think of any reason why it shouldn't have grown.
What variety was it?
It was a Yukon Gold.
You know, Yukon Golds are a very popular variety, and they've developed a name for themselves as being a really wonderful-tasting potato.
Right.
But it is actually one of the least productive and yielding potatoes out there.
Oh.
So therein might be part of your problem, is that
okay,
the Yukon Golds are not known for setting a tremendous volume and weight of yield. So I would try a different kind. There are a lot of other, you know, all yellow, yellow skin, yellow flesh potatoes that are equally tasty as Yukon Gold. They don't have that Yukon Gold name.
Uh-huh. One more quick question, if I may.
Sure.
I have, in the past years, I've had problems with animals, woodchucks and rabbits. And every time I put a blueberry plant in, they've nibbled it down to the nubs.
Yeah.
So this year, I tried putting that in a pot as well. So I've got a blueberry bush in like a 24-inch pot. And pretty deep. Right now, it sits in the edge of my garden. Should I bring that into my unheated garage for the winter, or just leave it out outside?
I'm going to hedge and tell you to call one of my colleagues that deals with perennials and fruit crops, because I'm a vegetable person. I don't know blueberries.
Yeah, probably what's going to happen is they're going to tell you that you're going to have to dig it into the ground. If you dug it in and that way you've got insulation, but of course then the rabbits are going to come and eat it off, eat them off again.
Right. Well,
build a cage around it.
Yeah, probably if you really insulated it and built a cage around it, you'd be fine.
So
sunk it into the ground, then you're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but like my unheated garage wouldn't be so good?
No, because your unheated garage is going to get virtually almost as cold as it is outside.
Yeah, okay. And it's going to heat up, and then it's going to thaw. It's also subject to a lot of variability in temperature.
Right, which is not good for most plants.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well,
all right.
Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, by the way, if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234. Phil in Chicago, Illinois, we are on to you. Hi, Phil.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a 10x20 garden, and the soil's great soil, nice dark soil, and I have flower pots around it, and I like to plant eggplant, and the problem is the eggplant that I plant in the ground has tiny, tiny little holes in the leaves, but the eggplants that I plant in the pots do really well. I mean, hardy, lot of fruits on the plants, but the ones that are on the ground are stunted and nothing, you know?
These are planted at the same time?
Yeah, they're all planted at the same time. They're all started from seed and several different varieties. In fact, the Japanese variety does really well, not in the ground, only in the pots. And then the Black Beauty and the Sicilian, Tunisian, they all do well in flower pots, but I can't get any eggplants to grow good out of the ground.
Given that those plants are right next to each other, I have no explanation why some of those would be being attacked by. I'm almost certain that you have a flea beetle issue in terms of those little tiny holes.
I look for bugs and I don't see any bugs on the leaves.
Yeah,
well,
they're little.
Flea beetles are A, very small, and B, as soon as they sense motion or whatever, they jump away. I mean, they're a thing that you know often. Well, you might not see unless you are very patient and just hang around and yeah. and sit there and gaze at your eggplants for...
Will a sulfur powder or whatever, would that take care of that problem?
Flea beetles are a really tough one to control. My recommendation would be to try using a row cover, the spun polyester row covers over your eggplants, especially when they're small and when they're freshly put out as transplants. Yeah. The other thing is that there's a lot of, there's many different kinds of flea beetles, and I'd have to defer to my entomologist, to Phil Pelletieri, the insect doctor, to tell you all the different kinds that might be attacking your eggplant. But there's a lot of flea beetle variety or species that are attracted to the color white or to white things. And so I've had good success making traps with old plastic yogurt containers and, you know, anything that's white, and coating it with a product called Tanglefoot, although, you know, you could use just, you know, Vaseline jelly does the same thing. And those flea beetles, they just jump to things that are white, and then they get stuck in the Tanglefoot.
Yeah. I'm going to give that a whirl. I mean, I just find it interesting that in the flower pots, they do really well.
Well, you know, in the plots, you're going to have a little different soil probably, too. You're going to have... What you put in the plots is not, in the pots is not the same as what you've got in the ground, probably.
Yeah.
So that's something to think about too. You might consider a soil test.
Yeah.
On your garden area, just to see what you've got.
And my other thing is a tip for the lady that likes broccoli. When I turn my garden in the fall and I get done turning it all up, I throw broccoli Robbie seeds all over the place. And in the spring, those are the first to come up, and you can enjoy them with pasta before you start even getting near the gardening point. You'll get a good crop of them out, you know?
Nice idea.
Yeah.
Thanks, Phil.
It's a hardy crop that loves cold weather, and during the spring, you'll be, for 2, 3, 4 weeks, eating nice broccoli Robbie before you even start to rototill your garden.
Thanks, Phil.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. John Hendrickson, our guest today with the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems. He is also coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at vegetables in the vegetable garden today with John Hendrickson. Join in with your questions and comments at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question there or maybe a photo. We have Sandy next in Oak Creek. So let's go there. Sandy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, this is Sandy from Oak Creek. Hi, John. Thank you for the information, and I would highly recommend John's classes. I took it before we became a market grower. But I wanted to make sure that John informs people, especially the person with the raised bed that had problems growing the lettuce and used composted horse manure, about the herbicide that is often sprayed on hay fields and persists even through composting. And it especially affects leafy greens like arugula and lettuce and turnip greens, and will cause a curling and a dying off. And it will persist beyond 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot the name of the herbicide.
But yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead. Sandy, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still there.
Okay. John, come.
I'm not familiar with a specific herbicide in this case. Either, but I really appreciate Sandy calling in with that information.
Mother Earth News has covered it, and it's on their website, some articles about people that have had problems with it in the past. Mm-hmm. And I unfortunately know from personal experience.
Yeah. Mm. Sorry for that.
Oh.
Thank you for calling, though, Sandy. Appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Oh, that's too bad. Pat in Appleton, on to you. Hi, Pat.
Hello. Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, my question, a couple questions real quick. Rototilling, springtime, organic garden, is it, you know, as we put nice dead things in there every year, composted material, is it best to till it up real good in the spring, or just kind of shovel turn it, or spot turn it, or what's your take on that?
Well, you know, there's lots of different camps in terms of the best way to tend your soil and build up that tilth and fertility. It in some ways depends on the scale of your garden. Mm-hmm. And your age, perhaps, and how hale and hearty you are as to whether you can get out there with a shovel, which, you know, probably is going to be kinder to the soil. But if you've got a large area and you're not a stout young person anymore, the rototiller, especially a rear tine, you know, heavy duty, nice garden tiller, is certainly a nice tool to use, and easier, you know, can be easier on your body if you've got a big job ahead of you.
Yeah.
Right. All right. And just one other question real quick. This creeping Charlie that is all over the place, it just runs crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if that's the name of it, but that's kind of what I'm calling it. Is any way to eradicate that?
Yeah.
Well, there are certainly herbicide options as an organic grower. My fallback on that is simply persistence.
Yeah.
Pull it. Yeah, you can pull it and pull it and pull it and pull it. Actually, if you pull it, it does hold it back. For my daughter and I had a couple of enjoyable times out there on the lawn, going through and picking out creeping Charlie. There is chemical. There are chemical ways. There's a triclopore kind of chemical that you apply in the spring when the plants are flowering. You get those little purple, bluish flowers.
Right.
And then in the fall, right after the first frost, usually, is the other time to apply that. And it doesn't really kill them at that time, but what it does is weakens them. And if you get a cold winter, you winter kill them.
Okay.
So that's another.
And depending on how large your garden is, you could experiment with putting some barriers down, vertical barriers at the edge of your garden.
Yeah.
To keep that plant out.
Yep. Good luck, Pat. Thank you for calling. Rod in Rusk County, we are turning to you now. Hi, Rod.
Hello. Yes, thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment. I no professional, of course not, but the Yukon Golds the man was talking about, I think they do better in a sandy loam soil. We got hard pan around here, and I planted some one time just because my neighbor had some, and they didn't really do too good. We got hard pan. And I that might have something to do with it, but the Kennebecs and the russets, and then I had some new variety called Blue Chip. That's the first time I ever heard of them. I got those at a nursery, and I put those in, and it seemed like it done good. But I didn't plant any of them until the middle of June this year. It was an afterthought when I was pulling these tag elders out, you know. And they always said for the years, they said it was always fresh ground that potatoes went crazy, you know, and they did pretty good. It's just that I got them in too, you know, so late, you know. But in another comment, we rented or just gave leased donated some little piece of flat ground for the Boy Scouts, you know. They had this thing going in Rusk County, and they planted quite a few potatoes. Well, this spring there was, I don't know, 17 or 18 of them came up, and I mean they really did produce. It was amazing, you know, that they were volunteers.
Oh, so they made it through the winter and...
Yeah, yeah. And they really produced, too. Yeah. Well, that's all.
Thanks, Rod. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Comment from you, John?
Well, thanks for the additional chiming in on the guy's potato question. I guess I didn't mention the issue with his heavy clay soil because he specifically mentioned that he was doing it in a barrel and was using an improved compost-based medium to grow that in the barrel.
We got an email from John and another from Barnes, Wisconsin again, pretty far north there. He has an opportunity to grow items in a glass greenhouse. What would grow in colder temperatures and in the middle of winter if you had a greenhouse?
Well, there's a whole range of things that can do well through the winter. The trick there is that most of those things have to be, unless this is a heated greenhouse, most of those things are going to have to have been started earlier than now in order to get going. And, you know, essentially a lot of the winter hoop house production, a lot of the growing, you know, happens in the late fall. And then through, you know, it's almost just like a storage area rather than harvesting crops and putting them into cold storage. You're keeping them in the ground in that hoop house and then harvesting over time. Spinach is one that does really well in a winter hoop house. And, you know, depending on how sunny your location is, will regrow and produce through the season. Various other salad greens are also amenable to that kind of a growing situation, lettuce and other salad greens.
There we go. Judy in Green Bay, your turn. Hi, Judy.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about Brussels sprouts. The best kind that I have ever grown up here is a variety called Bubbles. But I haven't been able to find that seed for the last 2 years, so I'm assuming that that's something that's no longer being carried. I've had a little bit of luck with Jade Cross, but it's a little bit late. And I wonder what you could recommend that would be maturing. I think Bubbles has a mature date of like 80 days.
Hmm. Well, Brussels sprouts are one crop that I don't grow.
You should. They're delicious.
Well, I know.
I love Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, Brussels sprouts are fantastic. I happen to have a seed catalog here with me, and I'm seeing a variety called Churchill, which is a 90-day Brussels sprout. So you could try to find that one.
I found one, I think called Catskill, and I had the most interesting experience after growing Brussels sprouts for like almost 40 years. I had a Brussels sprout stalk that essentially looked like a kohlrabi. It was swollen near the base, and it kept, you know, well, leaves like a kohlrabi. It never, ever headed up anywhere. So I finally just pulled it out. But I thought afterwards I should have taken a picture because I don't know if it was a, I don't think it was kohlrabi. I think it was a Brussels sprout. The leaves were more of those spade-shaped leaves. But it never did anything except, like, make one bulbous.
Yeah, you know, every once in a while there's a freak plant in the garden that, you know, where there's a mutation or something that just didn't pan out in terms of the genetics that
should have taken
along.
A picture of that one, Judy.
I should have, but I thought of that after I put it on the compost. Okay, so I'll look for Churchill then.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, Bubbles, you might try a place like Jung's. Shoot them an email and say, hey, are you going to have Bubbles or is it possible to get Bubbles? And they might, especially a local organization or a local company like Jung's would might be able to help you out there. So consider that. Go to their website. I think it's just put Jung's.
Should be easy to find.
Yeah, it should be really easy to find. I should have that right off the top of my head, but I don't. But I'd go there or try another local in-state growers, and they might be able to help you out with Bubbles. We have, you know, I wanted to mention again the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. It's held in January. And John, who's this for, John?
Well, this is geared towards people who are ready to take that step beyond the home garden and are ready to start producing and marketing and selling vegetables as a business. So we have three experienced growers and a number of university specialists who co-teach this three-day class. It's a real intensive look at what it takes to do this from startup to hopefully being a success.
So it's everything in like marketing?
Marketing, soils, greenhouses, tools, labor, economics. You know, how much can you expect to earn off of an acre of vegetables? The whole shebang.
The whole shebang. And it's in January. Again, the dates are?
January 13th, 14th, and 15th, here on the Madison campus.
So it's 3 days on the UW-Madison campus. And to find out, to register and that sort of thing, well, you can go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link right there.
Right.
And that's probably as easy a way as any. If a person's not online, you have a phone, is there a phone number?
Yeah, you can reach me at 608-265-3704.
So it's 608-265, what was it?
3704.
3704. Okay. All right, let's go to Nick in Green Bay. Nick, hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, my thumbs are black, so this is going to be rough. But I want to put a garden in the backyard, and the only problem is it's extremely wet back there. And actually, more than a garden, I'd like to put some type of berries back there, but I was wondering what you think with it being so wet back there. I've got a creek that runs back there, and it's just... It's a swamp almost.
Sounds like you might be. You could try raised beds, but if it's really, really wet, yeah, you may just not have the right location for what you want to do.
That's a bad thing. The soil there is so black it's great, but it's just. It could be 120 degrees out. I can go back there and dig 6 inches and hit water.
That doesn't sound like the best garden.
No, you might take. I suppose you could have a raised bed that's really raised, that's raised right off the ground, like one of our earlier callers.
Right.
And then you could take. That would need to be a bed that actually had a floor on it and raised up a couple feet off the ground or 3 feet off the ground, holes for drainage, and then. You could use that same soil from the sound of it, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you, John?
Sure.
And so you could do it that way. You could literally raise it off the ground and use that soil that's so rich, and give that a shot. It's I guess it'd be worth it. It's a lot of work.
Yes, it is.
A lot of work, but maybe worth a try. Thanks a lot for calling. John Hendrickson, our guest today, with the Center for Integrated Ag Systems. He's the outreach specialist for fresh market vegetables and food systems, and also the coordinator of the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for being with us for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller. Happy to have you along today as we visit with John Hendrickson of the Center for Integrated Agricultural Systems, talking vegetables with him today. He coordinates the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. And again, if you're interested in the course, the school, it's in January, and signing up, you can go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can get a link there to go right to the page to sign up for it. And you know, John, should mention too, in addition to the vegetables, you coordinate. You're not a flower guy yourself, per se, but you coordinate a program for cut flower growers as well.
That's right. It's patterned after the School for Beginning Market Growers, but instead of focusing on vegetables, we focus on cut flower business.
Mm-hmm. And that's when is that held?
That's February 18th and 19th coming year.
And that same site's going to have information.
Yes.
For people who are interested in cut flowers. Okay. Bill in Lancaster has a comment or question. Hi, Bill.
Hi, I actually got two things. The chemical that the lady was talking about as far as carrying over into gardens is Milestone, and their aminopyrrolids is the active ingredient, and it's been well documented that if a horse farm is either feeding hay or feeding spraying the chemical on their pastures, it can get transferred into your garden if you use their manure. The other point, some people were talking about fall tillage. What I've purchased, and it has a very high price point, but I think it's well worth it, is a rotary plow. I have a BCS 830 with a Berta rotary plow on it, and the rotary plow works on a different premise as far as how a rototiller works. A rototiller pushes dirt down, and a rotary plow lifts dirt up. It's not exactly old tech or new technology. Gravely's been building them for 30 or 40 years, but BCS has come out.
Yeah, I actually have an old Gravely that has one of those rotary plows. Unfortunately, that Gravely's not currently operating, but... Yeah, the rotary plow is an interesting tool. If folks aren't familiar with it, what does it look like? Well, it's essentially, if you can imagine, a large screw that is turning.
Okay.
And so the wings of that screw are getting down in the soil and then lifting that soil up. So this thing is...
Actually, a good comparison would be a post hole digger cut off into a foot tall.
Sure.
But then how does it just slides along on the ground then, and
it lifts it and throws it to the side like a moldboard plow.
End up
with a furrow.
But
they're fantastic for making raised beds.
Because they move that soil up and over.
And so how much do they run?
Oh, you don't want to know. I went all out. I have an 11 horsepower diesel on my BCS, And so it's a pretty expensive machine. If I were to buy what I have new right now, it'd be probably $7,000 to $8,000.
Ouch. Yeah.
Yeah, you can buy an old tractor for the same price as you can get. So those BCS tools are really nice. But as you start adding attachments, the dollar signs start spinning.
Oh,
very cool. They're excellent tools, though.
Yeah.
So you must be a market grower, Bill?
Well, kind of. I actually have a 360-acre farm that is in actual agricultural production, and I use, I obviously don't use it for my primary tractor. My primary tractor is 125 horse, but I use it in the garden. I also go around into the community and rototill for other, or custom rotary plow for other people.
Nice.
Oh, that's great. And you're in, Lancaster
yeah.
area.
Oh, I used to live north of Madison, so I'd go down into Madison and do it.
Well, Lancaster, you got some good growing, you got some good agricultural land right around there.
Yeah, the land prices have kind of reflected that, too. The nearby farm just sold for $8,000 an acre, and it's going to stay in agricultural production.
Wow. $8,000 an acre. Woof. Yeah. Well, Bill, I appreciate the information and the call. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you. Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Appreciate it. $8,000 an acre. Woof. Deb in Dubuque, Iowa. It is your turn. Hi, Deb.
Hi, Larry. This... My comment is probably toward the home gardener, but I don't know if some specialized people that are becoming more, with the unique plants and selling them. A lot of plants people call weeds are just unwanted, unloved plants, and if you can identify it and maybe, like, look it up in some herbal books or something, some are edible or can be used for, like, medicinal tea or... like the Creeping Charlie, he was the guy previously was talking about. Sometimes they go by different names and nicknames. Like I think that's called ground ivy in some
books.
It
is. Mm-hmm.
There's other plants too that people disregard as like kill it off with insecticide or something. But we could maybe do something safer, like dig it out and use it. Like nettles and dandelions and. Chickweed and burdock are some of the plants. But my point is, as soon as you want it and you look for it and harvest it, it'll start disappearing.
So you mean to tell me if I start pulling up purslane, which is also an edible weed, that all my purslane is going to go away on my two-acre market farm?
Maybe you can sell it.
I don't think I can sell 2 acres of purslane.
I don't know. Maybe the herbal companies would want it, or some farmer's market.
Mm, well, you never know. Deb, thanks. You weren't being facetious there, were you?
No.
Thank you, Deb.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And, we got... Lynn in Kenosha with a question. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Hey, I've got a complaint different than everybody else's. Everybody complains about being in the northern part and it's such a short growing season. We are sitting down on the edge of the Chewaukee Prairie and really just four or five houses off of Lake Michigan. And the sandy soil is just making me as a gardener crazy. I keep planting the things that I want to plant. What I really want to know now is what will grow in the sand so that I can actually... I usually get great plants, just huge plants in the garden, but I don't get any real produce off of it. It seems like no matter how much compost I put in, no how much topsoil I put in, no matter how much I water it, in a day, we can get the whole... Everybody else can be complaining of being, 4 to 5 inches of rain. We get the same rain except in the sand. A day later, you have to be watering the garden.
Yeah.
And I can do spinach. I can do Swiss chard. I can do the leafy lettuces. More than that, I don't really seem to be able to grow anything of substance other than maybe beans.
All right. What do you think, John?
What kinds of things have you tried, and how sunny is your garden location?
We have very, very tall trees. this little spot in the yard I picked because it's the only place that really gets good, maybe eight hours of sun. So I have one spot that really is pretty sunny in there. I don't have too much trouble. I've tried tomatoes. I've tried broccoli. I've tried the tomato plants get enormous. I'll get 10-foot plants. I'll get a blushing of fruit on it, and then it all goes away. I've tried cucumbers. They kind of take over everything, so then I pulled those out. But I can't get, I've tried, like, road plants. You know what really doesn't grow is anything that goes in the soil. I can't get any root vegetables to grow.
Yeah, but you know, I hear that you were doing a lot of amendments and composting and trying to build up that sandy soil. It takes, you know, eons to really change, you know, fundamentally change the type of soil that you're working with, unless you're going to, you know, start using a raised container type bed situation.
Right. And I thought before I go to a raised container, could I plant better what will grow naturally there rather than me try to force something that won't grow there? Yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've, you know, whittled down the list a little bit yourself. You mentioned the things that have done well for you, and then you mentioned some things that haven't done so well. And so maybe you should, you know, take that to heart. You know, that can be hard to stomach if you really want to grow a lovely tomato. It sounds like you mentioned that you might have 8 hours of sun in one of your locations in your garden, but given that you're getting a really tall tomato, yeah, and not a lot of fruit, that says to me that you just don't have a sunny enough location for some of the crops, the fruiting crops that really do best in full, and you know, full sun is full sun. It's, you know, zero shade.
Okay. What about something in the ground itself? I mean, is sandy soil? I hear that potatoes grow well in sandy soil, but I really don't want to plant potatoes. Mm-hmm. Is there any other root vegetable that will grow well in sandy soil?
Well, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of the carrots that are grown in the United States are grown in sandy soils out in California. Mm-hmm. So you could try that.
So when
My opinion, carrots that are grown in sandy soil don't taste as good as carrots that are grown in a nice silt loam.
Right. When I try to do carrots, I get lots of top, and I get very little short, stubby, not even short wide ones, just little short growth under the sand.
We answered that question in the first hour, and there's some recommended things, you know, keeping the soil moist, boosting your organic matter, which it sounds like you're trying to do. Those things are going to help.
Okay. So right. I'm going to have to go to a raised bed if I want variety then.
Probably.
You know, some other things that do well in the sand are melons.
Yeah. Melons do great.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. You,
But again, that's another thing that's going to like full sun. So,
yeah.
And like the cucumbers, it's going to take over a significant amount of space in your garden. So no easy answer there.
Thanks for calling, Lynn. Can you give us, an email from someone who wondered, actually a Facebook message from David, who said, can you give us some preferred methods and materials to start seeds?
Sure. I prefer a compost-based potting mix that has, you know, a good amount of nice organic compost in it. I use all kinds of different flats in my greenhouse in terms of, you know, it depends on what types of plants I'm growing, but you need to have a variety of pot sizes depending on if you're growing an onion, you might not need that big of a pot, but if you want a nice tomato or pepper transplant, you need to have that in a bigger container. And one of the things that I really like using in the greenhouse is a medium grade vermiculite. And the way I use that is, well, after I've filled the flat or the pots with potting mix and put the seed in to the appropriate depth, depending on the seed that I'm planting, I'll cover that up with vermiculite rather than putting additional potting mix on it. And I like to do that because the vermiculite will dry down quicker than a potting mix will.
Yep.
And so you have fewer issues with damping off. You know, I think we've all probably made the mistake of overwatering little seedlings, and then the plant diseases come in and nip that off right at soil level. The vermiculite really helps keep the area dry on the surface of the container.
We had an email from Benita in Muscadet regarding the short carrots that have come up a few times now. had the same problem last year. And last spring, on one of these garden talk shows, it was mentioned that carrots and parsnips need lots of calcium. So this past growing season, Benita saved all her eggshells and crushed them. And when the carrots were up about 2 to 3 inches, she laid down a layer of the crushed eggshells up against the tops of the carrots and parsnips. And this year she had long, straight carrots and parsnips. Where I laid a thin layer of eggshells on the parsnips, these parsnips are not as long and straight. The carrots were so nice this year, but not well flavored. But the deeper dug the carrots and I'm not reading this properly here, but something about the deer digging the carrots and up and eating most of them. And the garden soil is sand. That's what we got here. So the deer got into most of them, but she got long, straight ones with the extra calcium.
Well, it's true that the calcium is an important nutrient in the soil. I guess I'm not sure whether adding eggshells at that time would have actually provided available calcium to the plant. I'm not sure how long it takes the eggshells to break down and for those nutrients to be in a readily available form to the plant. But certainly wouldn't hurt.
And
you're going to, you know, improve things over the long term.
Yeah, absolutely.
By adding those to the soil.
Absolutely. Jeff in Richland, on to you now. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there. I've been looking forward to taking this class for about 2 years, and I finally got land to make it worth showing up at. My question is, I'm wondering, in your opinion, just in terms of disease and stuff, I'd really like to grow heirloom items where I can, but I just wondered, in your opinion, is that biting off more than I probably want to chew, or, you know, am I better off going with a hybrid that's more disease resistant, or since it's the land is like former pasture, that I'm hoping to go with a double dug bed system. I just wondered, in picking out varieties, I mean, do you feel it's a drawback almost to try to go with open pollinated heirlooms?
No, not necessarily. I guess my advice to you would be to, you know, hedge your bets and plant some of both. And, you know, determine what works well for you, what heirlooms you really prefer, what heirlooms sell well in the marketplace that you're targeting.
Okay.
You know, certainly there's a lot of interest in heirloom tomatoes. Heirloom tomatoes can be a tricky one because, you know, a lot of those varieties you end up with, you know, kind of funky-shaped fruit and cracks and splits and things. So you have to be careful there. But there's no reason why you shouldn't not try it.
Okay. Well, excellent. That's the seed catalogs are starting to come in, and I can't stand waiting that long. I'm trying to plant stuff.
Well, the question of, you know, seed varieties and heirlooms or hybrids is one that always comes up in the School for Beginning Market Growers, and you'll get at least 3 or 4 different perspectives on that from the grower instructors in the school.
Excellent. Well, I'm really looking forward to it, and I will see you then.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
Yep.
Appreciate it. All right, there's a customer for you. Ann and Stanley, we are turning to you next. Hi, Ann.
Hello, how are you this afternoon?
Great, thank you for calling.
Thank you for the program. I was just wondering, what is your opinion, and your guest, what is your opinion of what they call lasagna or layered gardening? I did it last fall, so I've prepared my garden. Everyone that I've talked to, and we have farmer relatives up here, they all say, no, you got to plow, you got to plow. And I've heard a guest speaker on your program about lasagna gardening, and I thought I would try it. So I'm wondering, what is your guest speaker's opinion this afternoon?
All right.
Well, I'm definitely in favor of lasagna.
I am too, and I just found a recipe for spinach lasagna.
That's another favorite.
Absolutely. But of that type of gardening, what are your thoughts?
Well, I have never tried it, so any comment that I make here is not going to be based on any personal experience. I don't think I've ever spoken with, you know, any friends or relatives or anybody that's actually tried it either. So, you know, it's a method that, you know, I work a lot with commercial growers. Mm-hmm. Rather than home gardeners, and this is going to be more of a home gardening method, so, you know, that's why I don't have direct experience with it. You know, it kind of you know, to me, it harkens to, you know, what you need to do with your compost pile in terms of providing a mix of ingredients to get good compost. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're layering these different things in your garden, those, you know, those things are going to, it's going to be composting and breaking down and creating good soil. My hunch is it's the kind of method that may well have greater success the longer you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so because you're going to be building up your soil inherently by adding all these different items into your garden. Plus you're going to, you know, learn over time what ingredients seem to work well for you and, you know, in terms of what ingredients you have yeah. available to you and then the results that you get in your garden.
Right. I guess my question basically or my confusion is, does that compost, now I've got compost, you know, scrap, kitchen scraps and leaves for my carbon and hay. I got hay from one of my cousins who farms up here. And so I've layered, and newspaper, I layered down newspaper, but this was on an existing garden. So my question is, does this, Do all of these ingredients really need to be plowed into the soil, or hopefully next spring will I have, you know, according to what I've read so far online, is that you don't plow this stuff in, you plant down into it.
Right.
So I'm hoping it's going to be, you know, decomposed well enough by then. Mm-hmm. To be able to plant into it and not have to dig. Supposedly, you're not supposed to have to dig down into the soil to plant your plants.
Yeah, well, I think you're going to have just a wait and see in terms of what results you end up with in the spring and what kind of planting environment you have. One tool that may help you in doing this kind of lasagna gardening is a broad fork.
Okay.
A broad fork is a very wide forked tool that is quite easy to use. Instead of having to really throw your back and weight into things, it's very easy to lift and loosen and aerate the soil. And while it's not going to be necessarily digging those materials in, it's going to be helping mix and sift and sort those things out and improve the results.
Yeah.
Great.
I
thank you so very much. Yeah. I appreciate your opinion.
And, you know, in terms of not digging into the soil and not worrying about it, I still hearken back to a film, an old film, a Ruth Stout's Garden. Mm-hmm. And Ruth Stout would take her potatoes, for example, and you have them cut up, and she had hay or straw, probably I think hay for the most part, it's sort of a mulch. She'd just throw them into the mulch and cover them back up, and they'd grow right there.
Yep. I did that with a small patch of potatoes on my place this year, actually, Larry.
You did.
It worked quite well.
Yeah, and a whole lot less work.
Yeah,
and pretty easy to get them to harvest them as well because they're not in the dirt at all. Really, were they?
No,
yours weren't.
No.
So
I've noticed too that I have over several years I've seen volunteer tomatoes come up, and those seeds, you know, those tomatoes are just laying on top of the ground. They don't they don't get dug in or anything, but they seem to come up every year.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this works.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Thanks, Ann. Thanks very much for calling. And John, thank you so much. The time flew by.
Thank you, Larry. I just want to just wish my dad happy birthday back in Ohio while I'm on the air. Hopefully he's listening online.
Hopefully. John Hendrickson, our guest with the Center for Integrated Ag Systems. And again, we've got the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Growers. There's also one for cut flower growers as well. And you go online to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We've got a link that will take you right there to see how you can get signed up for his classes.
Phone number
is
608-265-3704.
265-3704. Thank you, John. And thank you for listening. Monday we'll talk about some research going on at the South Pole. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.